December 2nd, 2010 meeting of the Citizens Involvement Committee of AMAS. We are, with this meeting, will be the end of the 2010 series of meetings, and so far we've had a very successful year in getting input and distributing information. I think tonight is going to be an especially vibrant meeting, which is we hope so, and we certainly hope that anyone who wishes to participate will feel free to do so.
Yeah.
This is an open forum meeting. We've tried to have a variety of input from people of different backgrounds, different experiences. This has been the foundation of the committee for the number of years that I've been involved with. We certainly hope to keep that going into 2011. So your comments are welcome. I would ask that, you know, like any meeting, we please respect other people's comments and viewpoints. And we would like to call upon people from the head table if it would allow us to do so, because we are trying to get everybody on the record and we'd like to have it clear as to who is speaking. First, on the formal agenda will be the minutes of the meeting of Thursday, September 23rd, 2010. If you don't have a copy, I believe there should be some extra copies on the back table. And motion and accept the minutes will be entertained as soon as you review the document.
Sorry.
Mr. Dietrich makes a motion to accept the minutes as submitted, seconded by Mr. Mackey. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the minutes of the September 23rd, 2010 meeting, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll then move into the third item on the agenda, technical progress report, and Curtis has some information for us on that.
Thank you, Chairman. First, for those of you whose first time at CIC, welcome. Take a brief moment to introduce us, some members of the staff. I'm Curtis Baker. I'm the planning administrator for AMATS. This is Heather Davis Reidel. She's a planner with AMATS, and Krista Beniston from AMATS, and our director, Jason Segedy, also. So during our technical progress report, the intent is just to kind of update the committee on what's been going on with the staff, what the staff's been working on, as well as kind of the bigger picture of what's been going on in the state and also at the federal level. From a federal level, obviously, since the last time the CIC met, we did have an election, had quite a major impact on the House, and especially in terms of transportation legislation. Some of you know, Jim Oberstar from Minnesota was the chairman of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee. He was a Democrat. He lost in the election, and therefore the Transportation Infrastructure Committee is now being led by Representative Micah from Florida. And what it does is it brings into question a little bit of what's going to happen with the federal highway bill in terms of where is the money going to come from the federal government to pay for roads, bridges, transit service, et cetera. That's something that we've kind of been watching. Safety Lose expired now, which was the old transportation bill, and what we've seen is every so often when the money starts running low in the transportation account, the government's been taking money from the general fund and putting it into the transportation fund to allow us to continue to invest in our roads and bridges. What we're interested to see is when they pass a new transportation bill is kind of the mechanism for how they're going to fund it, how it's going to be supported, basically how we expect to see it put into play in terms of what's going to be how it's going to be allocated to the states, how it's going to be allocated to the transit agencies, et cetera. Kind of on that notion, the AMATS Policy Committee at its last meeting passed a resolution supporting a gas tax increase. One of the main issues that we've been dealing with from a federal perspective is that as the, like I said, the account for transportation continues to dwindle, there's been a need for increased revenues, and one of the only ways to increase revenue is basically raise the tax or you can reduce spending. The AMATS Policy Committee recommended that the federal gas tax be raised 10 cents a gallon to help pay for some of the infrastructure needs, which, as we've seen over the last few years, have been pretty surmountable. Also important to the region on a federal level was that the Northeast Ohio 12-county area that included Cleveland, Akron, Canton, and Youngstown did receive a federal HUD grant for $4.25 million. The purpose of this grant was to do a large-scale planning study to look at regional cooperation and looking at ways that the region as a whole could work together to improve the economic environment, the housing environment, and also the transportation environment. And basically what it is it's very similar to, in a much smaller scale, what we did, which is connecting communities. It's a report which is in the back there that we did analyzing the Summit and Portage County region, looking at livability, sustainability, and sidewalks, transit service, and the connection between land use and transportation. Otherwise, technically, some of the things the staff has been working on is we've now got traffic counts on the website, an interactive map where you can go in and see what the traffic counts are in your area by location. We have a bike users map that we've been working on that's supposed to be a kind of a framework for someone to see what roads are safe to bike on versus what roads are not. We're also going to begin starting a complete street policy, which looks at, and especially for those of you familiar with the Montrose area, looks at things like, you know, how do we make this street friendly not only to the cars but to people that would like to walk between stores, for people that get dropped off using transit service, etc. And finally, I guess I'll end on the kind of where we are from the state level with John Kasich winning the election. Republican moves into the governor's mansion, and basically, we've already started to see a change in leadership from the Ohio Department of Transportation. We have a new director that was just announced, Jerry Ray. And basically kind of the hot button issue that stems from ODOT is the 3C, the rail line that was from Cleveland, Columbus to Cincinnati. And from all indications that, you know, we've heard from Kasich and from the new ODOT administration, is that the 3C will not proceed, at least in terms of actually getting constructed. But I know that there's still negotiations and discussions about that. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions on any of these topics. Otherwise, turn it back to the chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Curtis. Anybody have any questions or comments? If there aren't any, we'll move on to item 4 on the agenda. First of which will be the Rothrop Road Montrose Planning Study follow-up discussion. We had, as you can see in the minutes, we did have some discussion about this subject last meeting, and we will now continue with Curtis providing us some additional information and presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little kind of to start off, I think I'm going to do a little summary about this, but then usually for those of you that aren't familiar with the CIC, we ask for questions, and as Mike was saying before, anyone can, you know, raise your hand. The best thing about this is that it goes on public record. We take these notes when we go to our policy committee, which is all the elected officials in Summit and Portage County. Next week, we share with them the comments from the Citizens Involvement Committee to let them know of what residents' concerns are and citizens' concerns. So what I want to do is give a brief summary, and then obviously we'll turn it over to everyone to let them discuss the issue. But as some of you are aware, and some of you might not be, it's been in the paper quite a bit, but the existing Walmart and Sam's Club is looking to move to Rothrock Road in Copley. We've got to move from Fairlawn to Copley. It's basically probably a little less than a mile. This is one of the maps that we showed to our policy committee at the last meeting, showing the fragmented government of the in the area and some of the issues that we think that that causes. When AMATS first learned of this issue a few months ago, our major concern was from a regional perspective, especially from a transportation infrastructure perspective, but also from a land use perspective, and obviously because, you know, what would a Super Walmart do, what would a Sam's Club do, moving from an existing site to a very small road, Rothrock. And we're concerned about it from a regional perspective. One of the things that AMATS does is that it looks at kind of every transportation issue from a regional perspective. And one of the things that we've done in the past is say, you know, the Montrose area is our biggest regional shopping area. It has a regional impact not on just people that live in Fairlawn or live in Copley, but it basically, you know, from Akron as far south as, you know, Greene, you've got people coming and using this area to get amenities, get everything that they need. And so it makes it a very regionally important place. I guess the irony of that is that the place of Montrose, as we all know, doesn't really exist from the standpoint that it is Copley, Farallon, and Bath. And so I think from an AMATS perspective, we felt that there needed to be a regional look at this pick. You know, we needed to take a look at this from not from a development point of view from one side or the other or either community, but from the perspective of, you know, what's going to happen to this whole area over the next 5 to 10 years, and then what ramifications would that have on our agency? We provide federal funds for transportation projects in the area. And one of our concerns that we tried to raise with our policy committee was, you know, if this move happens, you know, if, whether it's a year down the road, 5 years down the road, or 10 years down the road, you know, there's a chance that they will come back to AMATS and ask for, you know, $1 million, $5 million, $10 million of federal money to fix some of these problems that they've created by making this simple move. So I think from the staff's perspective, that was kind of the impetus for AMATS getting involved in this, was a concern from a regional perspective of, you know, we're going to end up throwing good money after bad decisions that could potentially have pretty deep ramifications on the regional transportation network. So with that little background, we did hold a meeting with our policy committee on September 23rd, and we first showed them the report that we completed that was called the Rothrock-Montrose Planning Study, Analyzing the Effects of Commercial Sprawl. And what that report basically did was summarize the major concerns that AMATS had, both from a land use perspective and a transportation perspective. The transportation perspective was that AMATS thought reasonably you could expect to see needs of improvements in the range of $7 million to improve mostly the major choke points, the major intersections that are in the Rothrock, Brookwall, Cleveland-Massillon Road area that we felt would probably have to be done in order to make the transportation network work smoothly. We gave that presentation to our policy committee. During that meeting, we had both developer Herb Newman, who owns the existing Walmart building, and I can't remember the name of the representative from Levy's Corporation, but had representatives from Levy's Corporation also speak on the issues. And then we also had Mayor Roth came to this meeting and was very vocal and very concerned about the potential impacts to the whole region. Since that meeting, one of the things that Mayor Roth requested was that we bring it back to the agenda. So one of the reasons we have this meeting tonight is because we're going to take the same issue back to the policy committee next week and say, this is the feedback we heard from the community, this is what we heard from citizens, this is what we heard from our technical advisory committee, which met this afternoon, and from there, present it to the policy committee and really try to get some direction from them on, you know, what they think AMATS can do for a situation like this. Since we've had that meeting, I guess the two most major developments, and really the biggest one, is that the city of Farallon has said, and as we've met with Farallon officials, that they are looking at potentially cul-de-sacking Rosemont and Rothrock Road. And from what we've heard, that that's been kind of the response on that has been somewhat favorable from the residents, at least that's how it was told to us. However, from an AMATS perspective and a transportation network perspective, is that if the Sam's and Walmart came in and then we cul-de-sacked those roads, we could really be looking at some major transportation problems and some major issues. The other thing that we've seen, which is always a positive thing, is we've seen citizens mobilizing. There is the Citizens for a Better Montrose that is working to kind of bring light to this issue as well, and we've heard from them. I know, unfortunately, one of the mishaps that's happened is that our meeting was scheduled at the same time as the EPA meeting that's going on also tonight. But we've seen a lot of involvement from citizens. We've seen interests from, you know, both sides of the development coin. And I think the positive in this now is that we're talking about it from a regional perspective. We're talking about it from, you know, in a way, from an AMATS perspective, this issue, it might seem kind of micro, but in a way it's very macro. These things have been happening in a lot of places. Streetsboro, the Walmart jumped almost the exact same distance, and left an empty vacant storefront on 14, which still is at this point unoccupied. And as we continue to do this as a region, I think AMAX as a regional agency is saying, you know, if we can't stop this one, we want all of our mayors and policymakers to know that this really isn't a good formula, and we need to have more communication between our townships, our cities, our villages, in terms of zoning and transportation network. So also then to wrap it up, obviously, some of you may have seen there was an article in the paper today which Walmart committed, or I guess you could say they basically said for sure, we want to move, we're going to move if we can. So I think we kind of know where Walmart sits in the equation, and also some of the realities that we face in terms of, you know, that they're, because of the way it's zoned and because of kind of the way that the development process works, it is going to be a very interesting and delicate topic as it moves forward. But with that, I mean, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions, but also wanted to give anyone in the audience the opportunity to discuss the issue. And like I said, we'd be happy to take any comments back to our policy committee, which meets next Wednesday, which everyone is welcome to attend. And you can speak as a member of the public at those meetings and let the policy committee know your opinions.
Mr. Hardy?
Thank you. My name is Howard Hardy. I'm speaking as a private citizen, but I think it's fair to let everybody know that I'm a founding member of the local Sierra Club group. This development strikes me as a perfect example of how not to do things, given the fact that the latest analyses I have seen that are available on the internet or other places is that to sustain our current way of life, figuring not this change happening, the planet Earth is going to require the equivalent of multiple planet Earths to supply us. So things can't keep progressing in the way they have been. We simply can't sustain that. So it seems to me that in the best interest of this whole area, that this project as proposed should be turned down flat. And further, it would seem to me that as an inducement to developers to think better about what they're doing, if something like this is to go through, they should be required to cover all the costs of the infrastructure improvements necessary to accommodate, because those improvements would not be needed without it. And I don't think it's fair anymore to allow developers to impose those kind of costs on the general society for their, primarily for their benefit, and not for the benefit of the larger community.
Yes. Could you state your name for the...
Yes. My name is Des Borthwaler. I live at 130 Swiggy Foot Lake Road in Akron, the city of Green. I lived at Fairway Park for 8 years. Moved there in 2000. And my wife and I, we perused this area obviously many years for many services. I believe this proposed Walmart is the perfect place for Walmart and Sam's Club. I'm an oil and gas industry specialist. I work in multiple states on various projects consulting for companies. And this has been a long time coming. This is a perfect place for Walmart and Sam's Club. This is where they should have built 20 years ago, or when they went the first place. The current Walmart and Sam's Club location is a disaster to get in and get out. That whole Rosemont Commons is a nightmare to get in. It's a nightmare to get out. I understand that the Rosemont Country Club people are concerned about traffic. The Fairway Park people are concerned about traffic. In my opinion, those two developments, they're the ones that are out of place. Fairway Park should have never been built there. It's on the backside of Home Depot. It's on the backside of Levin. And it's got commercial development right up against it. Rosemont Country Club should have never been built. Those homes, you've got this highway right there. They should have never built those homes. And to think that now all of a sudden that this development that was going to happen, something's going to go in there. It's always been something going to go in there. It may as well be Sam's Club and Walmart. It could be, would have Delavese moved in and wanted to put in commercial buildings. He could put a six-story building over there, and the top floor of that building could look into all those homes. So in my opinion, this is something that needs to happen. As for the roundabouts, like I said, I live in Green. There's a roundabout on Maslin Road at Steese Road. So far, so good. Most of the residents that I know in the area like the roundabout. I think the entire area, whether it goes in or not, needs reconfigured already. Traffic coming off of 77 is tough. If Fairlawn moves forward to block off Rothrock, they're going to hurt the residents of Copley, they're going to hurt the residents of Fairlawn, and they're going to hurt the residents of Rosemont Country Club. Because at Christmas time, I don't know if you, most of you, if you're in the area at all, if you drive Cleveland-Maslin Road, that traffic light at Rosemont is almost impossible to get through. That road is backed up all the time. If they block it off, those residents in that country club, they're going to have to come out there. And they're going to have a tough time with it. So I don't think this is about Fairlawn. I don't think this is about Copley. This is about what I would call the village of Rosemont. They're against it because you've got these nice homes there, and they think that it shouldn't be there. And I'm sorry. I understand they have it's lovely homes, lovely development, but development's going to happen there one way or the other. It's not Walmart and Sam's Club. Who's it going to be? And I think the devil that you know is better than the devil you know. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else care to comment on the subject?
Yeah.
Don Dietrich. Yeah.
I would argue who was there first, the chicken or the egg. That's an argument that can go on forever. And I won't argue the necessity of a massive Walmart. Well, I've never been in a Walmart and never will be. But studies show that northeastern Ohio has one of the highest square foot retail space per capita of any place in the world. And we can't sustain it, and we continually sit here and say we're going to build more and we can rent what's there. And I'm not picking on Walmart or Sam's Club or anything like that, but when's it going to stop? When are we going to stop having empty big box stores? When are we going to stop having defunct retail areas because somebody's business plan says that we could make more money off of this business plan than we can off of what we have? I won't argue zoning, anything else. It just common sense says someplace along the line, we've got to level out. We've got to stop. We've got to take what we have and make the most of it instead of wanting more. That's all I'll say.
Okay, thank you, Don. Anybody else have any comments? Yes, sir. Could you please identify yourself?
Sure. My name's Jack Giron. I'm a resident of Fairlawn in the nice homes that happen to be right across the street from where the proposed development is.
Could you show us a little more?
Yeah, I'm not sure where I live.
Yeah, stand on your lot.
Right here.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
And it's unfortunate that more of my neighbors aren't here, because I can tell you that I speak for 100% of my neighborhood when I tell you that it's extremely important to us what AMATS does with the studies that they have so professionally prepared. I commend them. I can tell you that we've probably just heard from the only person on the entire planet who is calling for the new proposed Walmart and Sam's Club to be located where it's being proposed. So I'm not objective. I'll admit I am not 100% objective. I live right around the corner from where this will cause many, many problems from a transportation standpoint. Can we block it? We don't know yet. We don't know whether the zoning actually calls for a big box there or doesn't. Let's presume for a minute that it does. What we need to do is be objective about who is assigned the cost of dealing with the issues that will be presented by the development if it goes forward. We're all against it. I mean, we're 99% against it. But we can't stop it if it's zoned correctly. We can, however, make sure that the cost of the transportation improvements are assigned to the people who are causing the problems. And it behooves AMATS to convince the powers that be who are in planning, whether it be Summit County or Copley, that the proposed improvements that AMATS wants to see done, or not wants to see done, but things should be done because of their professional opinion, are in fact carried out. The only way to prevent problems in the future are to plan for them now. If we plan for them now, assign those costs to the developer and Walmart, we won't have a problem with it. We won't be able to block it.
I have a question for you, sir. As you're, you know, you're that close to the situation, the front line. A previous speaker commented in quite detail about some of the different maladies that would happen from a transportation point of view if the stores were relocated. You know, one revision leads to another, to another, to another. In your own words, what proportion of those improvements or changes fall to the developers of the proposed site? In other words, he says, I want to build a store, I want to do business. How far do the dominoes go, in your view, that are directly related to the development?
The only way I think I can answer that is by saying that if this proposed development did not go forward, we still have an issue. We still have a lot of problems. We still have the brick wall, Rothrock Road intersection in front of Home Depot is an absolute disaster. Whether those get paid for by the county or by the federal government or by the cities involved, I don't know. But I'm telling you that additional development here is not going to make things better. It's going to make things way worse. It's incredibly dangerous as it is. We don't need more traffic over here.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else have any questions, comments? Mr. Mackey.
I have a question on the C3 commercial district zoning in Copley. Does that mean that there's been a soil analysis done that the structure's going to exist here? And is that on the record in Copley? Or with an engineer somewhere in the county? I would have a question for Walmart and Sam's Club. I read in the paper that this has been a very good site, and they wanted to stay in Summit County. I know Route 18 goes west a ways to the Medina County Line Road. Were any areas out there looked at for a new site, and that would funnel the traffic west, away from the snarl we currently have in the Montrose area. Is Copley planning on having enough police, fire, EMS people available at all times to handle any issues that arise in the shopping area, because that becomes their bailiwick if their alarm drops at them, unless they work a deal with the county somewhere. That's all I have. Those are my questions.
Okay, thank you, sir. Any comment from the staff on that series of questions at this particular time?
Well, Bill, I took it most of your questions were probably rhetorical, because I think, especially the one about the zoning and the soil, I think that's one thing that's going to be discussed at that EPA hearing tonight. And
yeah,
encourage you to maybe follow up on that with Copley's zoning people and trustees. But I think you raised some good questions.
One more point, Mr. Chair. Is it possible for just Walmart to move to the new area and Sam's Club to stay and expand in the current area? And that way you wouldn't have quite the amount of traffic in this proposed development? Or vice versa, move to Sam's and leave the Walmart and let it expand? That'd be a question for Walmart, Sam's Club.
Bill, I have no idea how landlocked the existing stores are.
None of it's a business model.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. None of it's a business model. That's always a good answer.
Well, you know, from a day-to-day operations standpoint, you could say there might be some problems with deliveries or something like that, but I certainly couldn't speak to it. The only thing I can say is the existing sites are constrained to the point that they just don't feel that they can split the two commercial identities. Anybody else have any comments? Yes, sir. Could you please identify yourself?
Yeah. I'm Stephen Funk. On behalf of the City of Caroline, they asked me to attend tonight. A lot of the residents actually are at the EPA meeting. And I understand clearly tonight just an opportunity for citizen comment to the staff on some of the transportation issues, so I'm just going to focus on that. And you brought a board. This is actually a pretty good overview of the area. I think it's easier to talk about some of the intersections if you can look on map.
Do you have a laser?
Yeah, we have a laser.
Do you have a laser?
Yeah. Maybe you should stay here. Yeah.
This is actually something that was given to us by the developer from a recent meeting. Just for the record, I'm with Rhett von Andrus, and I was asked to attend tonight's meeting on behalf of the city of Fairlawn. Just focusing on the transportation issues, which is really the focus of tonight's meeting, I think that there's a very significant concern. I think it's highlighted in the AMF study about how traffic's going to get to this location. Right now, you've got, you know, a fairly congested area right here on Route 18. And so the vision is going to be that traffic's going to come down Springside and cut over this way. This is already a very, very congested area as it is. And so I think in the past there's been some discussion of perhaps a traffic circle here. Obviously some widening of Springside potentially could be contemplated. But no matter what you're going to do, you're going to be trying to squeeze a whole bunch of traffic into this road that really is not designed for it. And there's a significant issue with regard to this interchange, whether it's set up for that. Because right now you've got traffic coming out right here, and there's not a lot of room here for backup. So one thing that's going to have to be considered is whether this interchange itself needs to be redesigned, because you have, you know, you don't really like cloverleaf interchanges anymore. But, you know, one possibility is actually having an exit right here with a light, so you have a little bit more room here, and you can maybe have a, you know, right turn lane, left turn lane kind of thing. But those are all things that really need to be studied. The URS study that was done by the developer really didn't look at this interchange at all, and didn't really look at this interchange at all. In fact, it didn't really discuss really anything to the south of the development in any great detail. Because I think what from the city of Fairlawn's concern is that traffic is going to be a mess here. It already is. It's just going to be that much worse. So what's going to end up happening is that people are going to start to get off down here at this interchange and are really going to start to use Rothrock Road as the primary entrance into this area. And that's fundamentally inconsistent with the land use plan and the zoning of the city of Fairlawn, which envisions this as being a commercial area, but this area down here is a residential area, and it's designed to be kept as a residential area. The Rothrock Road is a collector, but it's not designed to be a major thoroughfare for a commercial area. So, yes, the city is thinking about and considering what its options are with regard to Rothrock and Rosemont, which are the two streets that are located within the city of Fairlawn. But I think from AMAT's perspective, the real question is, what scope of improvements can be made here so that if there is a development, there can be, you know, traffic can actually flow here so that it can stay away from these lower areas. On this map, it's actually interesting because that is sort of the highlights of these areas. But if you look at the southern end, and it's not really as visible here, but you've got an interchange down here. That's actually a pretty poorly designed interchange at the moment as well, because Rothrock Road comes up like this. There's a light here. The part where you get off at 71 is right here, or 77 is right here. So one possibility is that this road right here could be extended so that it matches up with the exit ramp, and there would be a light there, located there, so that if people are getting off, they would be able to get on Rothrock. But these are all possibilities of things that need to be studied. I mean, obviously, I'm not proposing or making specific recommendations right here. I'm really just discussing what the issues are. But that is certainly one of the improvements. Now,
as part of the AMAT study that was talked about, it was envisioned that there were $5 to $7 million in improvements that would be required. And I think, if anything, that might be an understatement. The question really is, who's going to be responsible for paying for all those improvements, and why do we ultimately want to make these improvements? Because in the end, if you make these improvements, I'm talking about in the South, all you're going to do is make Rothrock into a thoroughfare. The city of Fairlawn really doesn't want Rothrock to become a thoroughfare. We want to keep the traffic and the congestion up here where it belongs, in the northern part. So I raise all that to just highlight, I think, part of the concern here, which is how this traffic congestion is going to be managed in this area. I guess I leave with this note, which is, I think significant more study should be looked at into what improvements can be made here at this interchange, along the lines I've talked about. What can be done about this congestion here? You've also got, I think, isn't there like a wall or something that prevents, the left and right turn? So you have an issue there about people getting off and getting on Springside. There's also development right here. So if people are coming down like this, you can't just, it's difficult to take a left turn. So this whole area of Springside requires a lot more study and a lot more development than what's been contemplated so far. You have this issue of this interchange, how that's going to be handled. And then ultimately, Rothrock Road as a whole, what happens with that? Whether it gets cut off at some point, whether if it doesn't, you have to have it expanded, whether you should have what kind of berms and improvements can be made to shield the residential areas. Rosemont is not designed to be a major point right now where I think cars are going to be coming up on Rosemont, whether Rosemont itself should be closed. So there's a whole host of issues that need to be studied. And I guess my final point is that I would appreciate AMAT joining in with asking for the developer to do more expansive study than they've done so far, with better specific answers for those questions, so that ultimately, if this does go forward, this can be managed in a way that's going to provide for the improvements in advance rather than trying to react to the problem after it's been created. So,
Sir, I'll ask you the same question that I asked the other gentleman, because your professional is close to the situation. Talking about all these intersections, all these roads, again, what proportion of these projects fall directly to the development of these stores versus previous underdesign or misdesign, whatever you want to call it, that has not kept up with the overall development of the area? What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, I believe that these problems are designed, are basically created because you're trying to put a development south of what is already a developed area, off of Rothrock Road. Rothrock Road was never designed to provide for that massive amount of retail. So, in my opinion, the answer to your question is that all of the need for additional improvements are directly associated with that development. And the other thing the AMAT study points out is that there's an area just to the south of it that, that I think is looking potentially to be developed as well.
In your own mind, if Walmart and Sam's Club go away, and this project goes dormant, is that a permanent thing? Won't there at some point be another project which in his jobs creation or tax revenue or some other issue come to the forefront, and eventually it's just going to have to be dealt with? Is that a possibility?
I mean, anything is possible. The main point is let's focus on what we're talking about here and what can be done to improve the situation in a way that's going to make it work. I mean, this is going to obviously create a major traffic problem, and the question is going to be, what should be done to alleviate that traffic problem? And should we do it now prior to being developed rather than allowing it to be developed without the traffic improvements and then having the problem get it worse, which in the end is going to put the city of Fairlawn in a position where they may need to close rock like in Rosemont just to protect the residents. So the answer to your question is, yes, if there is a future development down the road, that development will need to be dealt with as well.
Well, I appreciate your presentation, your comments. Anybody else have anything on the subject?
Mr. Chair, may I add a question? I just had a question. You know, one of the things I think that the staff doesn't have a great feel on that a couple people have mentioned is this idea of lining up the exit ramp of 77 with Rothrock and doing some sort of thing where the exit would actually, moving the exit kind of south so it would match up. I'm just curious for any of the citizens there, is that considered a positive improvement? I don't feel like as a staff we have a good perspective of that.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. That intersection's bad. And since we're talking about, let me ask this question. Is there a possibility of an entrance, well, or an exit ramp off of 77 splitting the Walmart and Sam's Club? Fitting in, I've seen this done in a lot of places all over the country, where you put a new development in, and they just collect everybody right into that development. And I guess the question I have also is, everybody's saying all this extra traffic. Well, in my opinion, you've got Best Buy and Home Depot right there, and you've got Walmart and Sam's Club. So you've got the same people perusing the same businesses for the most part. How much more, what they are doing is you are taking traffic from one area and moving it to another a little bit. But people who go to Best Buy are going to Walmart and Sam's Club too. So you're, how much more traffic is it really going to bring to the area? I don't think you're going to bring more. I think you're just going to funnel more into a different area. And I think that's the way to describe it. But yeah, I would definitely, the Rothrock thing, that needs done. That would make total sense.
Okay. Mr. Segedy would have some comments on this gentleman's
point. One quick follow-up, and that is, based upon, we're still having traffic consultants look at this, but based upon initial traffic counts, it's our opinion that it's going to triple the amount of traffic flow on Rothrock and Rosemont. And that's really the concern, I think.
You mean if they completed that piece of the interchange? Okay.
No, not the interchange. I'm talking about the development.
Oh, just the development. Okay.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing there. You'll get slightly different numbers, but I think the gentleman that spoke previous is correct in the sense of generally Walmart and Sam's are going to generate the same amount of traffic regardless of where they are, but where that traffic goes is radically different. And I think that, well, one thing I want to address your comment about the ramp, and then I've been trying to stay silent here so you guys could talk because my hot air covers these meetings all the time, but I did have a couple of comments maybe to throw out to the group just for further discussion. As far as the ramp, anything's possible that has been done places. However, there, I think it would never be built right between those stores because the situation you have with the traffic from 21, that's already a horrible, what traffic engineers call weave area. And, you know, all of you have driven that where you've got the people coming off of 21 trying to get over to the left at the same time you have the people on 77 trying to get over to the right. So that particular location, and it's just, and this is going to segue into my next comment, this is a perfect example, and this is why AMATS wanted to kind of take this issue on, is this, you can almost look at that map and see how those stores are being kind of jammed in as the last missing piece of Montrose, where the road infrastructure just flat out doesn't match the way that the land use is. And that's one of our staff's big pushes the last couple of years has been this idea of coordinating land use decisions with transportation decisions. And if you look at the Copley zoning, and I'm not a lawyer and I'm not an expert on zoning, but Copley zoning really doesn't match the way that Fairlawn's road has been designed. And it's Copley's road, the county's road for part of it too. But, and that's not one thing that we said in our report, we're not here to assign blame. I mean, planners are to blame for all sorts of problems. So as planners, we probably wouldn't get that far making that assertion. But it's just, this is kind of a good example of where our society in general, we don't have coordinated plans for things. And these things kind of just evolve over time. And And one of the points I won't read from the report, but we made in the introduction is, well, I'll read part of it. Tens of millions of public and private dollars have been spent in order to ensure that State Route 18, Cleveland-Massillon Road, I-77, and other nearby roadways operated an adequate level of service. Even at that, most roadways in the Montrose area operated under less than ideal conditions for much of the day. Nevertheless, much progress has been made, and traffic conditions in the Montrose area are arguably better than they have been at any time in recent memory. And I think our staff believes that's true. They're certainly by no means ideal, and I speak also as a resident and motorist that shops out there all the time. But I think what we were really concerned about, and one reason we wrote this report, is just there has been so much money spent by taxpayers just to subsidize all the development that's occurred in the Montrose area already, and we just don't, we would hate to see all these traffic problems created to move stores a mile and then to have people come back to our agency and say, you know, we need all this federal money to improve the roads. And it's so much harder for elected officials that are on our committee even to turn down, you know, there will be mounting public pressure if these stores get built and the road, for lack of a better word, is horrible and terrible condition. I mean, there's going to be another group of taxpayers that are going to say, what are we paying you guys for if you don't fix our roads? And that's why we want to discuss this issue right now, so it hopefully doesn't come to that. So that's just a little bit more background for your thought of what the genesis of even writing this report is. Because in the end, our committee of elected officials has no power to either stop that development. You know, like the one gentleman mentioned, the zoning is what it is. If the zoning is determined to be legal, which I imagine it will be, there's not a whole lot that can be done about it. But I think one thing we want to discuss with the elected officials that Curtis touched on earlier is this doesn't have to be the way we plan things in our region. I mean, this kind of evolution of just letting things happen willy-nilly, that's the whole history of Montrose, really.
Let's hear from a couple new people, and then we'll move on to the rest of our agenda. Mr. Smetana?
Yes. Thank you. My name is Steve Smetana. I also live right in the neighborhood. I don't know if the laser pointer is still available.
There's another little residential community that nobody's mentioned just yet, and it's called the Enclave. It's a little condominium community that is right here. I think we would be considered probably the closest owner-occupied residence to what would be this new proposed development. And just to get out of the gate, I want to disagree right away with the fact that the amount of traffic going there would be the same as the amount of traffic that was going to head up that way anyway. There's also a big new grocery store, which brings on a whole new bunch of shoppers to a Walmart Sam's development that were not those same shoppers before. So that is additional. And the amount of traffic and the change of traffic and what that road, you know, Rothrock Road, would have to bear to not only support this proposed development, but any new development that would probably end up right up in this area, because you know that further development is going to start to surround it. So essentially what Walmart ends up doing is taking, you know, this corridor of commercial retail area and starting a whole new area adjacent to everything that's residential. Fairway, us here at the Enclave, and our neighbors here in Rosemont Ridge, not to mention there's another little housing development here called Rothrock Place. I don't think anybody's here from Rothrock Place tonight, but they would, they've been to some of the meetings and would chime right in. So I am representative of that group you referred to as Citizens for Better Montrose. As it was noted before, most of them are at one of two other meetings that are being held tonight, which is the Copley Zoning Planning Committee meeting and also the EPA meeting being held in the Copley High School. So I wanted to reiterate the list of, you know, a laundry list of things that would be an adverse effect to the quality of living. There is no way that a Walmart or any other big box type retail plunked into that area could spend enough money in traffic to maintain A, our property values, and B, our quality of living right in that area. And that's what it's all about. And ironically, and maybe unfortunately, Everything that's Fairlawn over here in this oddly shaped, shaded area is residential or the golf course. And this little clump of Copley is commercial. All of this is zoned commercial. And then, of course, all of this is commercial. And you can almost call the apartments commercial because they're rental properties developed, you know, to sell something, living space, to make a profit. So thank you for the use of your pointer and for the opportunity to comment to the board.
Okay, thank you very much. I saw a hand.
If I may, one more time.
Oh, yeah. One more brief, and then I'd like to take one more person who hasn't been heard from, and then we'll move to the
mayor.
Pointer?
I might add that two comments. One is that the only person that spoke in favor of the Walmart being here is a person that's moved away from the area, and now there's the green. The second is that if anybody knows anything about even rudimentary knowledge of land planning, the way land planners plan is they take a highway, they say the most logical use next to the highway is heavy-duty commercial. The next most intense or less intense use would be multifamily apartments. The less intense would be condominiums, which are right there. And then the less intense would be single-family housing. I refute anybody who would say that this housing development doesn't deserve to be there or shouldn't be there, because it's planned exactly how land planners plan commercial and residential use, land use. Commercial, multifamily, less dense multifamily, and single family. So please don't believe what you heard a little bit earlier. That housing development belongs there. And this is a step backwards in land planning to put commercial next to multifamily and single family.
Thank you very much. Do we have one more person who hasn't been heard from?
And Chairman, I think we can take, if there, I do want to give everybody a chance to speak if there's more people that want to comment.
Right.
I'm happy to see all these people from the public. One of our goals always is to try to engage citizens in planning issues.
I think I saw Mr. Mangold with a hand earlier. Was that
right? I just wanted to agree with Mr. Dietrich regarding the business plan and agree with Mr. Harding on the sustainability issue. There are advantages to dense urban commercialism. Should we look to the future, and that future being the non-auto-dominated society in which the current business model apparently exists for the Walmart Corporation, and that is looking to the future of light rail transit. There is an advantage of having everything consolidated together instead of spread out all over, so it could serve transit. I've heard nothing from anyone from Metro here to point that out, that a one bus stop versus multiple bus stop is a better deal. If they do get to stay in their current location, I think they need to look at their own business plan. If they want to expand, I'm sure the zoning regulations allow it. They can always put a second deck on those stores and completely rebuild them as a two-story structure and stay where they're at.
Okay. That's just
a couple other things to add. I've heard it said that Walmart has made its proposal known and lied in there with that proposal that there is a need for this additional retail. And I would propose to you that their existing locations are not all that much smaller than what they're proposing to build, and that the additional things that they want to add, a gas station and a supermarket, exist tremendously in that area already. There are three other supermarkets with another one proposed to be entering the area shortly. I think they've already signed a lease in Fairlawn Plaza or Fairlawn Commons, where Circuit City used to be, or not Circuit City.
Where Borders used to be.
Borders, CompUSA used to be, correct. And, we know that that area is going to get developed in the future. And if it's going to get developed, there are uses that could be developed. We hear Cleveland Clinic is looking to move into the area. A medical-type facility would be something that would be more suitable to be located adjacent to residential areas. So, you know, changing the traffic and spending the money to change the traffic and make the infrastructure improvements to suit something like this that really doesn't have a need in the community as Walmart has proposed is really kind of senseless.
Okay, so thank you very much. Yes, sir.
I'll keep it brief. Just one comment you made about what the role AMF could have in this whole process. Beyond the zoning, Copley within their zoning code has the ability to look at traffic circulation issues, and they're getting comments from the county engineer with respect respect to what traffic improvements, if any, should be made for this proposed development. I think that the role that AMAC really can provide is really to look at and comment on the adequacy of the study that's been done so far, which I think has not been adequate, and to point out the specific areas that should be further studied and examined. You know, the things that I pointed out today, you know, the interchange down at Cleveland-Maslin Road in Rothbrock, nobody really has studied or examined that issue. The interchange at 18 and 77, nobody's really examined and studied that issue. So those are the kind of things that could be helpful. One other final point is that just south of that 77 interchange is an area that essentially the last undeveloped area in the city of Fairlawn that is zoned for B4. It's actually for a business park, business office park, and it's really a kind of a crown jewel for the whole area because where it's located is perfectly situated for a development of a commercial, not a commercial, but a business office district because of its situation off of 77 and its vicinity between the two airports. And we would hate to see this exacerbate the traffic position for that, so that really makes that a less desirable place for the kind of development that we want in Northeast Ohio. And so I guess the really what I'd ask AMAC to consider is how it can continue to be part of the discussion in looking at, you know, this needs to be studied more, this needs to be studied more, and hopefully having sway in making sure that if this does go forward, that the proper improvements are made before rather than after the problem's been created.
Yeah, and if I could touch on that, that issue alone, I agree with you, we would like to play that role. And that issue alone was part of the impetus for us doing the report that we did, because we did feel that the traffic studies that we had seen previously did a good job, but they did a good job only of focusing on essentially, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but basically the entrance to Walmart. And, you know, you don't have to be a traffic engineer. The way that I describe this a lot is Rothrock Road is like a pipe. The pipe is probably wide enough in the middle. The pipe isn't wide enough at either end. And every car that's attracted, I mean, we estimate 10 to 15,000 vehicles a day being attracted to those developments. And that's why my earlier statement saying it's around the same amount will probably generate more because it's a super Walmart. But the bigger issue is it's not even so much how much traffic it generates, but it's generating it onto what type of facility and moving it from where. And every car that comes in there has to either go through Cleveland-Maslin and Rothrock or go through some combination of Brookwall, Rothrock, Springside. And just looking at that map, I mean, it's obvious. Those roads were not designed to get people. You know, Rothrock Road itself used to just go straight north-south before there was a freeway, and the piece that runs east-west wasn't even there. So that's where I think we definitely as a staff feel that those that development will generate enough traffic that it will be directly responsible for causing a lot of traffic problems both at Cleveland-Maslin and Rothrock or at 18 and Rothrock and Springside. And so I agree with you that we feel that the footprint of impact of that development extends a lot further than just the traffic light that we put in front of the Walmart and the Sam's.
Okay. If no one else has any comments, we'll conclude that portion of discussion. I want to thank everybody for their input and their comments and also the overall decorum of this part of the meeting. Thank you very much.
Chair.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dean.
I'd ask to be the chief.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Okay, next on item four is the Connecting Communities Planning Grant Awards. I believe Heather has something for us on this subject.
Yes, thank you. As a reminder, or maybe kind of filling all of you in on how this came about.
Please speak up. We've got a lot of people.
I'm sorry. I'll do my best. I don't have the best voice today, so forgive me. Just want to remind you or jar your memory about how all of this came about with the planning grants. The idea to fund two planning grants in the AMATS area came out of the Connecting Communities Initiative. The Policy Committee the Policy Committee approved the creation of a task force at the beginning of August. By the end of August, can you hear me? By the end of August, the task force met to review the to go over the applications and the scoring process. The applications became available on our website September 1st and were due October 15th. We got 17 applications. We were very pleased with that. From there, the task force scored the applications and came up with about 9 applications that scored fairly high and all very close together. 2 applications were at the very top, and that would be the Richfield project and the Metro and Akron project. Although there were many, like I said, that scored directly right under those projects. Therefore, the task force recommends to the policy committee that the top 2 projects be funded. Again, that's the Richfield and the Metro Akron. If you take a look at attachment 6A, you should all have this. You can see a summary of all of the applications and the scoring for those, as well as summaries of the 2 projects that will be, 2 studies that will be recommended to the policy committee. I can give you a quick rundown on what those grants are about. The Richfield grant is a gateway. They want to create a gateway to the National Park and Traditional Village Center. They want to create a land use and thoroughfare plan. The project is centered, or the study is centered around I-77 and 271. They want to improve the traffic flow and develop access to transit, plan to link diverse components of the area, and examine the vehicular, bike, and pedestrian traffic. The Metro Akron project, the purpose is to connect the 6 disjointed districts that comprise downtown Akron. They want to study the land use pattern in relation to the transportation network, look at all the modes of transportation, and provide various alternatives to modes of transportation that are not working. So at this point, the staff is going to recommend to the policy committee to approve Resolution 2010-22 in order to fund these 2 planning grants.
Okay, thank you very much. Anybody have any comments or questions on this subject? Okay, we will be dealing directly with the resolution referred to in the presentation very shortly. We also have other policy committee agenda items. In particular, in your packets, attachment 5A, which is the 2011 meeting calendar, it is the multi-colored grid of the calendar for 2011, which includes not only our meetings, but those of the Technical Advisory Committee, Policy Committee, and the annual meeting scheduled for next October. We would entertain any motions for approval or comments from you at this time.
So moved that we accept the calendar.
Mr. Mackey has moved to accept the 2011 meeting calendar as submitted.
I'll second.
Mr. Fish has seconded. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the 2011 MS meeting calendar as proposed, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Next, we have attachment 5B, which is the 20% local share requirement relating to MS federally funded projects. This is included in the packet for your background and information only. It does not require any motion at this time. But if you have any comments or questions for the staff, please speak up. Mr. Mackey.
I have a question. It talks about the 20% coming, say, from each municipality. Let's click on our map on the wall or a copy. Let's say there's some project that Fairland wants to do. They don't quite have enough money, and Copley's got some money. Just like the MPO share between each other funds that they're not going to use in the future. Is there any mechanism for the municipality to say, yeah, I'll let you fund your project this year, but you have to agree to pay me back when my turn comes up and do a project down the road? Or does everybody stand alone in their own little silo and they don't share with them?
Bill, are you talking about doing a joint project that they both happen to sponsor? Or are you talking about almost lending money back and forth?
If one has a project, doesn't have quite the money goes to another municipality. loan me some money so I can get my project going. When you have your project coming up, I'll pay you back. Just like the NPOs do moving that money around.
There's no formal mechanism to do that right now. Communities could enter into cooperative agreements to do something like that. What's probably a little more common is we have had instances where, say there's a road like Seasons Road where it's on a corporation line, that one being Stowe and Hudson. A lot of joint projects, they may both split the local share. You know, our federal funds require a 20% match. On some projects, they may each pay 10%, you know, pay half of it. The other thing you mentioned, that's a little less common, but communities would be able to enter into cooperative agreements to do that kind of thing.
I'm just wondering how much regionalism our elected officials have to do in this area.
We're hoping that they do more every year. If I could maybe, because I don't think we had a vote on the Connected Communities Planning Grant resolution. I just wanted, before we moved on to any more questions on the 20%, if you guys did have any questions on the planning grant program, and then Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you wanted to entertain a vote on the resolution for the Connected Communities Planning Grant program.
Well, if we're ready to move on from the 20% local share requirement.
Well, I just bring this up because we just discussed it.
Right. Well, we're at the point now where we have the resolutions that are up for review tonight, which is under attachment 6, 6A, B, C, and D. As you know, we've had in the past kind of an open format regarding these resolutions. We've entertained motions to pass a motion all as a package or individually as the participants have seen fit. So if you have had a chance to review these items or have a particular feeling about them, we will entertain motions at this time regarding these four resolutions. Do you feel like taking them as a package, or would you like to identify a particular one?
Mr. Chair, I move we bundle all the resolutions together for a vote.
Okay. We have a motion for Mr. Mackey to bundle the four resolutions under consideration at this time. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Kellerman is the second. All right. Do we have any discussion on the motion?
Only one on our connecting the right number. On 6D. In the future, I wish the staff would have a little bit better map. We have a map on hiring. I have no clue what this trail, where it is, and everything. I thought it was Google hiring. I'm not sure where it starts and where it ends. So maybe just a little bit better map showing where the impact is.
Oh, 6D for the one that's labeled project number one?
Yeah.
You talking about maybe having a map that zooms in on the area a little bit more?
Yeah, that would show a start and ending point, you know, just like a construction plan.
Yeah, we could do that. I think on that particular one, that one is for a study. Right. So I think even what's shown there is kind of a conceptual alignment.
Right.
But your point's well taken that I think for some of these projects, having a map of the two counties might be a little bit coarse for seeing what's really going on there. So we'll definitely...
Right. You gave us a good map of Richfield, a good map of Akron earlier. I mean, show us...
Although seeing maps like that more often.
Something like that for the highway. Well, we're just going to start and stop.
Sure.
Something in the view. That's my only comment. Okay, you're very well done, but...
All right, we have a motion and a second regarding the four resolutions in question tonight. Resolution 2010-22, the Connecting Communities Planning Grant Awards, which we have previously received the presentation. Resolution 2010-23, TIP Amendment Number 46. Resolution 2010-24, TIP Amendment 47. And Resolution 2010-25, TIP Amendment 48. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting these resolutions for approval as a single item, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the resolutions are adopted. Next, we move on to item six. We have the report of the CIC nominating committee. And Krista, did you have some comments on this item?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. It's the time of year where we pick our nominating, or we nominate people for a chairperson and vice chairperson for the following year. We had a nominating committee that got together and called a lot of the members. Typically, they recommend two people, and then it's open for a discussion and a motion. There was interest in bringing new people and discussion. This year, the nominating committee nominates Michael Ondecker for a chairperson and Alex Kellerman for vice chairperson. And at this time, we will open the floor and a motion is requested.
You guys want the job, I'll make the motion to re-elect the chairman and the new vice chairman.
The nominees have been consulted and know what they're in for. You won't be in the conflict of interest if you ask for all in favor of saying no.
Oh, is
that right? Yeah. You're still allowed to discuss. That's your privilege as the acting chairman.
Well, I certainly appreciate everybody's support the past year and in 2011. I look forward to a lot of good things here and certainly appreciate everybody's input. Do we need to take a formal vote then?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Being that we have a motion for Mr. Kellerman and myself to serve as the leadership of the CIC committee, anybody have any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the slate as recommended, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. I can vote for myself, can I? Okay. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Politicians get to.
So. Okay. Thank you very much. Next, we have the subject of business community outreach, and Alex, do you want to make some comments on that subject?
Well, just thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to carry the process a little bit further from the last meeting, we talked about the possibility of creating a subcommittee, if you will, or a smaller group to specifically address the issues of concerns of businesses in terms of transportation planning. To that end, we were successful in getting AMATS and possibly some Hudson officials to address the Hudson Economic Development Corporation's January meeting. It'll be 7:30 Friday of the month. So, the 7th. And we look forward to any other opportunities to address any business groups, if any of you are members of Rotary or business associations that would want to hear more about the transportation process, but also, more importantly, give us feedback and things that they find important in what transportation planning, how they can help them. I would have hoped that someone would have been here tonight from developer or from Walmart Corporation, possibly have signed up when we were joking before about having been charter members of the business group, because I was silent tonight on most of this discussion about this development. I have to tell you, quite frankly, I'm not in complete agreement with most of the comments that were made, because I joined this group originally because I was concerned of the effect of transportation with planning was having on businesses. But that's just my perspective. I think there are some others that meetings that ODOT had that weren't very well attended from the business perspective. I don't know. I know it's a lot to ask people that are involved in their own concerns to come out at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and sit with a bunch of mayors and planners and talk about things. There may be other ways for us to do that. Maybe it's online. Maybe I don't know what those are. So we're looking for input and appreciate the opportunity from MS to pursue this a little bit further and maybe some of these outreach programs will help us be doing that.
Okay, thank you, Alex. That is the end of our formal agenda tonight.
Yes, sir. I was just going to add, and especially if anybody, you know, from the group wants to maybe follow up or discuss what Alex mentioned. I think, well, I guess first and foremost, I think one of the neat things about this planning issue is it's given our staff a little bit of an opportunity to talk to developers somewhat. We've been talking to Summit Management and Stark Enterprises that own the existing site. We've talked a little bit to Larry Levy and his group also. I think you raise a really great point that it's really important that we not just be in the echo chamber of government officials, because you know, one of the things that I pointed out is you could have all the good planning in the world or all the good ideas of planners in the world, but in the end, people responsible for building things is the private sector. You know, there's a public sector involvement in infrastructure, but I think until everybody gets on the same page, which requires give and take on both sides, you can't have a real dialogue on planning. So I think you raise a really good point, and I was just going to open it up to the floor if anybody else had any ideas. I think that's one thing at CIC we've always kind of struggled with, but also talked about, is how do you get more people involved in planning issues. I mean, typically our meetings are small unless there is an issue like this, and then people come out, and that's, you know, that's partly reality. That's the way it is. Not everybody is going to come out and talk about abstract planning principles at 7 o'clock on a Thursday night at Silver Lake Village Hall. But I think the more we can get people engaged, I like what Alex said about, like, very often in government, someone will hold a meeting at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and call it a public meeting, and it just, most people are at work at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So I know, Bill, you've talked before about our ads or other things that can maybe do to try to engage people more, but the staff would definitely be open to any ideas that you guys have either tonight or as things occur to you. And Bill, I always appreciate you sending me stuff because it always makes me think, so.
Okay.
Comment?
Mr. Magel.
We need to keep having these controversial issues because it makes being on this committee very exciting. That's why I like coming to it.
Well, you're going to like this then, because I would like to point out to everybody in your packet, hopefully there would be these blue pages, which are a public comment memorandum from Mr. Harding to the ANATS committees. It's a subject which I think resonates with a lot of people when they're coming to these meetings, and that is the role and the use of rail transportation. Contained on the pages of the attachment, there are many statistics, many identifications on websites and other information that I think could serve well to develop a position on this subject. Just very quickly, $400 million had been earmarked for Ohio, may well go elsewhere because of the viewpoints of the incoming governor and his staff to be. I hate to see the money go in other directions, but in this day and age, there are plenty of states and cities who will go after that money, and it will be one more lost opportunity for Ohio. But please read this, and please take it to heart, and thank Mr. Harding for his time and dedication in putting this together.
Thank you very much. I was literally a labor of love because I have become increasingly upset, not by the fact that the issue is diversity, I think that's very good, but that the discussion is so heavily dominated by fact-free remarks. And I mean that literally, totally backwards. The most fact-free remark of all is the one that nobody writes credit and nobody writes research. All you have to do is look at MSA and writers' figures for the last decade to find out billions of people write. If you look further, 15 states that already support rail, you find out that all of them are growing by leaps and bounds. The only constraint on the ridership of those trains is there's not enough cars for the trains, not enough trains running, and not enough traffic. It's not that nobody wants to ride the train. I don't know where this idea came from that nobody rides it, but it's just simply, that's wrong.
Well,
I won't want any further, but I could, or not. I'm more voice just like that.
I just want to say thanks for, you know, the time in putting this together, and I certainly hope the issue isn't dead, and we'll have to wait to see with the incoming administration. Hopefully there'll be a groundswell of support. But I just wanted to point out that everybody should be aware of this, presentation. It's filled with good information, good facts. Unless anybody else has anything, we're at the point of adjournment.
I'm sorry?
Who?
Right over here.
Oh.
I just wanted to follow up with, this is on a lighter note, follow up with a comment that I made in the last meeting about moving meetings throughout the AMS area to different locations, and I was wondering if AMS staff has looked into that at all?
We discussed it after your comment, and one of the things we were thinking about is maybe, although we could do it differently, maybe holding the first one since it's coming up fairly soon, January, back here. But that, I'm glad you brought it up now, Ruth, because that might be something, even getting input from everybody here. If you've got some, you don't have to give us locations as far as facilities or buildings, we can look into that, but even geographically where you might want to hold meetings. We occasionally have had meetings in Kent. All the years are running together now. I think it was the year before last we met at Akron Metro's new intermodal facility downtown and had a special meeting there where everybody got a tour of the facility. And we would be very open to holding them throughout. Usually when we establish our calendar, we'll try to schedule them a couple meetings in advance just so people know where to expect to go. And one reason we've usually had them here is people know they can count on this being the location. But I think it would be good to have a couple meetings in different locations.
Well, I have spoken with two mayors, and they're very receptive to the idea. Like, yes, please. And they'd even offer their council chambers if we would like to use those, or their public meeting rooms or community rooms. So,
which communities were they?
Fairlawn and Norton.
Okay.
Both mayors were very open to the idea. I know that's just one section of your community, but those are just the two mayors I happened to run into in the last couple of months, so I haven't actually made any cold calls.
Okay, no, that's what you did already is great, because we could definitely look into having a meeting with each of those locations.
Yeah, I'm just guessing, if I just run into them and I mention it to them, they're so open to it, you'll probably find that with a lot of other communities.
Okay, thank you very much. Nobody else has anything? Mr. Mangold.
Two things. May would be a great month, I think, to go out to Metro and take a bus ride and see the facility there. I missed that the past year. And secondly, just a historical note, next year in February will be the 150th anniversary of President-elect Lincoln's visit to our region, stopping in Hudson, Ohio. I'll be giving a brief lecture on that event at the Monroe Falls Historical Society luncheon on Saturday, and there's an event scheduled in February in Hudson, and I'll get info on that to you for the January meeting. It'll be on February 15th if anyone's interested. And the event that'll actually be in Talmage at the local restaurant there is on this Saturday, December 4th. I might add that Lincoln also, as you all know, is a Republican, and he rode trains. That's how he got to Washington.
Anybody else have anything? If not, do we have a motion for an adjournment?
Motion.
Mr. Mackey. Mr. Mangold is the second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor of adjourning at this time, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your input tonight and your participation. As a reminder, next meeting is January 20th, right here at Silver Lake. Happy holidays, everybody.
Kristen, you need to turn that off before I ask you.